proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. America, and all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 13th of August, Anno Domini 2011, and you lucky people, you're listening to Sound Bites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we're going to be bringing you news, views, stuff to use, things to choose, nothing to lose.
And all that other good stuff.
Absolutely no booze. Here's our story of the week. This is a good one. Who are all these people? And what are their phone numbers doing on your Facebook contact page? You know how it goes on Facebook? Somebody you don't know asks to be your friend. You look over their friend list, decides they probably aren't an axe murderer. You say yes, because Facebook is a fairly low-risk, low-maintenance connection. And if they prove to be truly annoying, you can always block or defriend them later. The vast majority of these people did not voluntarily give you their phone numbers, but Facebook just gave you all their phone numbers, no questions asked. Apparently, it's because they elected to share their contact information with the world, so Facebook did the next step and added their info to your list. Want to see for yourself? Launch Facebook, click Account, and then Edit Friends, then select Contacts from the menu on the left. You should see a long list of profile pictures, names, and phone numbers. It gets weirder. Check your phone. There may also be people whom... check your actual phone. There may be people whom you do not know who are not in your phone's contact list with whom you share no connection whatsoever and have no friends in common, but who are in your Facebook phone book. Now, Facebook will start asking you if you want to friend them. And some of them are minors. Facebook has been syncing mobile contacts this way for some time. I'll bet you just never clicked on the contacts page before. With neither your knowledge nor your consent, Facebook will import all the names and phone numbers from your phone's address book and upload them to your Facebook phone book app on Facebook.com, thus storing your private contact numbers on Facebook's servers. Once your phone is synced, Facebook will attempt to match the newly uploaded phone numbers with users that have listed the same phone number on their Facebook profile, whether you are friends with them or not. Why exactly is Facebook storing all of these numbers on its servers? Well, that's a good question. My advice, stop sharing your phone number on Facebook. You can go to Facebook's Remove Imported Contacts page to delete the numbers from your friends, of your friends. Sometimes it even works. That's good to know. You can go into your account privacy setting, click Customize Settings, change access to your contact information so only select people can see your number, or you can just delete your phone number from Facebook and be done with it. Would you just hand your phone number to a random stranger in a bar or on the street? Probably not. Well, you might. So why are you doing that on Facebook? Our poll of the week at soundbites.org, that's bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is not available to me at the moment. Yep, there it is. Facebook shared my phone number with the world, and your choices are yes, and I hate it, yes, and I don't care, no, and I haven't even bothered to look. So far, no is actually winning. I'm very impressed by that. I haven't even bothered to look, of course, is next with 24% of your votes. Yes, and I hate it, 5 votes, and yes, and I don't care, 0 votes. Now, I know you people because you are going to have a whole lot more to say about this. So when you are done with the poll, check the yellow box underneath. Click on Give Us Your Opinion. It will take you to another website, a great website, where you can then enter that opinion. The question there, of course, is how do you feel about Facebook sharing your phone number with the world? 6 people have answered. One of them answered twice. You don't have to hit.
I gotta fix it. There's such
time.
A delay on that.
There's a huge delay on all of these. Yeah.
I'm gonna redo my own.
And then when you're done with that, of course, come back, join us on Soundbites. You can join us here 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 1-800-790-0415. You can join us live on the IRC chat. We're on FNET at Octothorpe Soundbites, or of course you can always go to our homepage at soundbites.org and join us right through that. We're on Facebook. People find us in the supermarket. We're everywhere.
Well, I was going to tell, if folks haven't had a chance to see us live here in the
right,
studio.
Oh, right, we're on Ustream.
Definitely try to do that. You want to talk about multitasking. I now have, now on a Thursday night, I have in front of me here now for the control panel, 4 monitors, 3 mice, and 3 keyboards, which during an average show, I use all 3 at various times, and trying to keep track of which mouse goes to where, because people switch the mice around, and you got to get them in the order that you want.
Listen, let's face it, you have trouble keeping track when it's one mouse.
No, I'm not as bad as Steve.
No, one
I know how to double click. Yeah,
that.
I can double click.
Ooh, there's a website. 2 buttons, 1 mouse.
Sorry. Ooh, that's a good one.
2 buttons, 1
mouse. He's looking to see if it's already been taken. Somebody right this minute is actually...
Guess what comes up first?
What?
The Apple Magic Mouse.
The Apple Magic Mouse.
There we go.
Well,
the Google.
Well, let's just think. You can have a
what's that term that guy invented? Your search results depend on your past search results.
Right.
So if 2 people search for exactly the same thing, they will get completely different answers. See what you get when you search for that.
And another way folks can get a hold of us that we want to mention is that they can text us. And if you text
I get the same thing.
585-209-9010, you can text us and ask your question there if you're out on the road and want to get to us. And
could be a site of horror pictures for Apple people.
Yeah.
What's that extra button?
Apple has fixed that now. The Magic Mouse has no physical buttons on it.
Right.
The entire surface of the mouse is a sensor. So you still get left click and right click. You get scroll up, you get scroll down, you get swipes. You get all of the multi-touch gestures. Because
they used to call that a trackpad.
Yeah. it's the whole mouse is a sensor.
I did find a picture that I took a long time ago. I think I was down in the southern tier. And I went by a computer shop. You know the Macs? They were like a little cube.
Sure.
You know, monitor, very first ones. And it was being used as a door wedge to keep the door open.
Nice.
I got to post that up on Facebook.
I've seen pictures of them as aquariums, as cat houses. Not that kind, Steve. Look, English is a positional language, unlike Latin. In Latin... puer bonum and bonum puer mean the same thing, but in English, house cat and cat house do not mean the same thing.
It's, unless you're
Steve.
You just
have to get over it, all right?
Unless you're Steve.
Do you know what I read yesterday? You know, you can give us a call and get us off this.
Well, no, I don't.
At 585-966-JAZZ. That's
9-2-5-2-9-9.
Toll free 1-800-790-0415. Yesterday I read... Mm-hmm. There is a company that is investigating using thorium to power cars. Thorium they call it, I guess, a rare earth. It's certainly a radioactive element, but it is a very slightly radioactive element. There's millions and millions and millions of tons of it in every country on Earth. It's in every rock and in soil and in everything else. And by hitting it with the interesting property that it has is if you hit it with a laser, it gets hotter. I mean, by a lot. You know, it's magnitudes hotter. So a little bit of laser gives you a lot of heat, and they could use it to power steam turbines to power an electric car. So we'd finally get those steam cars that we've always wanted.
Yep.
It's very exciting. And they're talking about it. Now, the question is, you know, people are going to get nuts. Oh, my God, you want to put radioactive material in my car? No. You could eat the amount of thorium they would put in your car wouldn't bother you in the least.
You probably get more radiation in there from the sun right now.
Yep,
just going out there.
Exactly right.
Exposed and sitting folks that sit out in the hours baking themselves in the sun.
Yep, exactly right. So
where did I find the story for this? CrazyEngineers.com.
Yeah, of course you did. Of course you did. I just think it's a great idea. I would love to be able to have an electric-powered car. They say the amount, you know, a gram of thorium would power your car essentially for the lifetime of the car. You know, it would replace 7,500 gallons of gasoline.
And no pollutants.
And a gram is about the weight of a paperclip.
In addition to that, it's so small, the amount of radiation you get out of it is so small, it can be effectively and completely blocked by aluminum foil. So, you know, you put it in like an inch of lead, it's really not going to be a problem.
No.
It really isn't.
Those aluminum hats I've been wearing are helping me.
They are helping you from the thorium.
It's also getting you a lot of weird looks, too.
Well, particularly when you twist the ends of the aluminum hat into horns. That's the big part for him.
And wearing it to work.
And wearing it to work. No, it's an anti-static thing, honest.
3D. I saw that in 3D.
That's what thorium is named after.
Thor, yeah.
Exactly.
Oh, really?
You saw Thor in 3D?
Yeah, that was
They're doing
good.
Another study about why 3D gives people headaches.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and the reason is that we have evolved to look at things, oddly enough. But the problem is, when you're looking at 3D, the light source is the screen.
Right.
But stuff is happening in front of and behind the screen, subjectively. And your eyes have trouble jumping focus. They're always trying to look at the thing in front of us that's projected from the screen, but your eyes keep trying to jump back to focus on the screen because that's the real thing in the room. That's the light in the room.
You're being pulled from it.
Right. So you're trying to focus on what's in front or what's behind, but your eyes are going, no, the real thing is where the light source is.
Mm-hmm. Go to the light.
Right. So there's no solution yet, but that gives them a way to go to figure out what to do next.
I wonder if it's based on whether it's real or fake 3D. There's a nice website, realorfake3d.com, that lets you know if the movie was filmed in 3D from the beginning or if it was filmed in 2D and they digitally added 3D later. Now, Thor was a fake 3D movie. So for people where 3D gives them headaches, try a real 3D movie, see if that's any different.
The way
they generate the 3D is different.
Yeah, I don't particularly like either, although real 3D is a little better for me. I don't pay for 3D if I can avoid it. I just don't.
The other thing, too, is $5 extra a ticket.
Right. So that I can leave with a headache?
Yeah.
Why, thank you. May I have another?
Want to go to a really expensive movie? Try IMAX 3D.
Yeah,
it's $20 a ticket,
about. We did go see, we've seen a couple of things there, From the Earth to the Moon, the Tom Hanks documentary, which was utterly phenomenal.
I think I saw the third
Magnificent
Spider-Man.
Desolation
there.
Was good.
Right. There was a Cirque du Soleil that we saw there that was very good.
I read something. Let's see if I can find it again. A lot of the IMAX theaters. See, IMAX is a brand of giant movie screen. A lot of the theaters that have these big movie screens are actually taking out their expensive IMAX projectors and putting in digital light projectors, you know, like a projector you'd use in your conference room.
Right.
It's a digital projector, so they go, oh, cool, it's a digital theater now. But it's only 1080p, which is very low resolution. And then when you blow it up on a 70-foot screen...
Well, that's why, these folks that were jumping on the 3D TV, it's like, definitely there. I wouldn't want to be the pioneer on that.
I have a friend who bought one, and he said, yeah, it's really, you know, except for, like, the one channel where you can watch fish. There's not a lot going on in 3D. He essentially bought it for sports. He bought it for sports, but it's hard to watch it with friends because you don't have a wide angle of vision. You have to buy more glasses, and they're not cheap, and on and on and on. And I'm thinking to myself, yeah, no, I don't need 3D that badly. I'll wait till it's a cube and stuff actually appears in midair.
Wait for 4D.
Wait for 4D.
Well, it's like
there you go.
Like we always say.
I watch tomorrow's game. It's going to be great.
Yep.
Why be the pioneer?
Right.
Especially in this case, you know what I mean? It's
pioneers are the guys with the arrows in their backs. Adam Osborne said it years ago.
Mm-hmm. We repeat it all the time.
Yep. And it's true. You know, it's probably going to be a good technology, but version 1 is not.
Although we need the pioneers to pay the 10 grand for the home 3D system so that in 5 years I can buy one for 100 bucks.
Yeah, God bless every one of them, and thank you, but I'm not going to be one of you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Not here.
It's just not going to happen. So if you want to talk about Facebook and how it screwed you up.
Well, they did the same thing they always do. They roll out a feature and add everyone to it automatically and then wait for the complaints to come in.
Right.
This is, what, the fourth or fifth time they've done this mm-hmm. and gotten think they'd learn by now, but no.
No, they'll exactly still right. take game.
Well, you friended them. Why wouldn't you want their contacts?
Right, but I might have friended them not because I don't want them to have my contacts. Here's the other thing. I've given you my private cell phone number. You friend somebody on Facebook I don't even know, they now have access to my phone number.
Yep. Uh-uh.
I really don't like that. I mean, I really don't like that.
Sorry, that's one thing I do not give out, though, is my cell phone number. Uh-uh, not on Facebook or any other place.
Well, but if you've given it to somebody who's on Facebook...
Nope.
No?
Shop number is the only...
Oh, there you go.
See, we're old curmudgeons. Young kids these days...
They don't care.
They do everything on their phone. They don't have a landline. They share everything with everybody. In fact, just this morning, a young girl, she's probably in her 20s, came in to buy a screen protector for her iPhone. And we have several screen protectors that are polarized and for privacy. So someone looking over your shoulder or beside you can't see your screen. Well, I don't want that. I want to share my screen with people.
Yep.
Okay, we'll buy this one then.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Well, and that's true. I mean, I was at the social media meeting this last Thursday night, and people were pushing their phones around saying, look, here's my baby, here's this, I was on vacation and whatever. It's the album now. And so you want people to be able to look over your shoulder. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We will be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. 19 minutes after the hour, sound bites on the wonderful member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are sound bites. A Japanese website reports, I think, I'm trusting to Google Translate here, that Apple has a media event planned for Wednesday, September 7th to announce the company's new line of iPods. It also claims the iPhone 5 will ship in September or early October. It's not clear if the new iPhone will be revealed at the same time as the new iPods, according to the reporter, at a separate event a few weeks later. Other conflicting rumors put the phone launch in early September or maybe October. The site, Kotowarsian, maybe, has accurately reported Apple rumors in the past, but there has so far been no independent confirmation of this one. The date does fall in line with Apple's pattern of releasing new iPods in the first part of September. The cycle has been a little different for Apple this time around, however. Normally, it announces a new iPhone at its WWDC conference in June, but that didn't happen this year, further fueling the speculation of an early fall iPhone release. It would make sense to do the iPhone and iPod announcement at the same time, but it's tough to know what the logic is that's coming out of Cupertino these days. Assuming logic is, there has been additional speculation over the new iPod this year. First, there are photos that emerged, apparently showing a new 1.3 megapixel camera for the iPod. Also, a drop in iPod sales have left others to wonder if it might be time to scale back the iPod family. There's, 140 of them right now? Different models. As for iPhone design rumors, there's not enough time in this show to recount them all, so we'll just have to wait and see. Our question to you, ready for a new iPhone or iPod? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299 or toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
There is, the only definite thing is that Apple said they're going to release iOS in the fall.
Right.
So, the new iOS 5.
iOS 5.
It's likely there'll be an iPhone 5 announced along with it. But some of the more strenuous rumors, sites are saying, no, not on the 7th. You know, so it's a fight. My sources are saying the 7th. Well, my sources are saying the 14th.
But what are they really saying, though, that's going to be on this? That's going to, the i5 is going to be so much different than
it'll have a 5.
Yeah.
Really, it'll have a 5.
You know what? I'll bet you after that will come 6.
It'll be a 6.
That's pretty dangerous thinking, mister.
Thank you. I'll go out on a limb.
It's the.
I live on the edge sometimes.
You live over the edge sometimes. But yeah, what is going to be new and different?
Yeah,
in it?
I mean,
if it's not going to do my dishes, it's just a phone.
And it's already got a front and rear facing camera.
Higher resolution. Yeah, there's the typical. It's probably going to have higher resolution cameras. There's some rumors that it's going to have a bigger screen. Right now, there's a bezel around the edge of the screen, so they can make the screen bigger without making the phone any bigger. So what's that phone that's like 4.7 inches, and that's just too big for people to hold in their
hands? Oh, yeah,
the
Droid X.
Droid X, yeah.
My HTC is a 4-inch screen.
4 inches is okay. You start getting above 4, and it's too big to fit in your hands.
Yeah, there's a 4.7-inch. Yeah. I think it's a Droid X.
Yeah, that's
and it's
cool.
It's a huge phone. It might as well be a tablet. And they have 5-inch tablets and a 4.7-inch phone. Yeah. Okay, that makes sense.
It'll probably have the faster processor, the A5 processor in it, although other rumors are pointing out that the A6 processor has started production. And that might be a quad-core processor. Somebody announced a quad-core tablet, I think it was.
Right.
Most of the tablets that are out now are only dual-core.
But the real question is, how much phone do you need?
Yeah.
You know, the reality is, and I get it.
Just Apple, one more.
Right. Apple people can't live with yesterday's phone. I do truly understand that. But the reality is, if you've got the money, God bless you, go for it. Mm-hmm. But for the rest of us, I'm still using the original Droid.
Most of us have 2-year contracts.
Right. As it turns out, I probably can't play Fruit Ninja as fast as you can. Mm. I really don't care. It's still hard enough to actually make a phone call. What I used to be able to do with one hand now takes 2 hands and my eyes and everything else, right? It used to be I could pop open my phone, press a button, and hold it because it was a speed dial, and be talking to my wife.
Yeah.
Done.
You still can.
On your phone, maybe.
You should be able to do it on yours, too. All phones have speed dial.
Not my Droid. I've got to swipe it open. I've got to start the phone app. I've got to look down. I've got to make the keyboard come up.
Mm-hmm. I see what you're saying.
Make a phone call. I've put my wife's phone on the desktop. I still have to swipe the thing open, look down and find it, and push it.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
You know, I can't. So yes, I've got 2-touch dial, but I've still got to wait for the phone to open up. I've got to push the on button.
Yep.
I've got to swipe it open. I've got to look down and push that thing.
Yeah. No, you're right.
So it's not at all the same as flip, hold, on.
True. One thing we should mention, talking about phones and everything else, as our listeners might not know, and it was announced this week, you know, there was the app for the iPhone, the iPad, and the iTouch.
Right.
There is now an app for Jazz 90.1 for the Android phone.
Yes, there is.
So
we're
if you
very
want to
excited.
Take Jazz 90.1 with you, no matter where you go, there's an app for that. And that's both on the iPhones, the iPads, iTouches, and now the Android system.
Any Android device will run it. It runs great.
Yep.
Just download it, tap it, and you're listening to whatever's
there
on at
go.
The moment. And
yep.
If you download it right now, you can listen to us on your phone as you wander around the whole world because it's on your phone now.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got the free data plan, which a few of you still do, you win. Or if you're within Wi-Fi range of something, then that'll work.
Again, that's getting something that's becoming more and more prevalent, is Wi-Fi all over the place.
Well, and it really has to. We can't use data plans anymore because we don't have them.
You just go anywhere, and there's free Wi-Fi that you can sit there and not eat up any of your data plan. And, you know, like you say, if you're sitting there having, say, a cup of coffee.
Yep.
Oh, wow. See, the picture on Jazz 90.1's website has the iPhone picture from Singular.
Okay.
That doesn't exist anymore. They got bought by AT&T.
Yeah, right.
Actually, and that was one of the old stories that Apple
went, nobody will sue them for putting that picture on.
Yeah, Apple went to Singular, which was a small cell company, saying, we want to do a phone. We've never done phones before, but we want to do a phone, and will you do a phone with us? Because if it failed, no one would notice, because Singular was such a small company. And then suddenly Singular gets purchased by AT&T, and it's the number one carrier.
Oops.
And they can't handle the traffic.
Yeah.
That's the same thing they did with the iPod.
They went to the record industries and said, you know, can we have licenses for digital music? If this flops, no one will notice. And now, as big as it is now.
Mm-hmm.
It really depends on the town you're in. If you're in New York or San Francisco, Chicago, St. Louis, places, you know, that are heavily populated and really don't have a whole lot more in the way of cell towers than we do, AT&T is terrible. Dropped calls, no reception, lousy service.
And they blame it on city regulations. They say it takes, in San Francisco, they've said it takes 5 years to get approval for a new tower.
I'm not saying it's their fault.
They're
I'm
putting
just saying
their 2G towers
I say
up
right now.
Now,
I haven't had any issues, you know, all the places I've been around, you know.
Well, especially in big cities with tall buildings, it's a hard to get a line-of-sight connection to your radio tower.
There are a lot of blank spots.
Well, like I say, having that little fob to swipe credit cards.
Yeah.
The square mine. Mine's on its way.
Is it? That is so sweet. Customer will go, geez, I want to...
I mail you a check?
Yeah, or, you know,
hand me a check now. How about that?
I says, you know, you can pay by credit card. Well, I can call it. I can swipe it right here. You can?
Yeah.
Yeah. I just took her credit card, pulled up the app. I was connected through her wireless because I just set it up. Swiped it. Boom. The money went through.
Yep. I'm working with a friend of mine to do seminars on Google.
Mm-hmm.
Showing people how to get on Google Docs
and
how to set up their business. If you're a small enough business, you don't want to hire somebody to be your guy, and so you can do all that stuff. And we're talking about how we're going to present, and he's saying, well, I can do that out of my iPad. I could do it out of my Android tablet. And I said, no, we're going to use a regular laptop. And you know why we're going to use a regular laptop? Because I've done this before, and the first 20 minutes of the seminar are about, how are you doing that? How does that work? Does it work well? Can I do that? Show me how to do that.
Yeah.
We're not about that. That's not what this one's about. We're not going to talk about that. I once brought a Palm Pilot. That's how old this technology is. With a Margi card in it, which connected directly. M-A-R-G-I, remember
that? Yes, I remember that, yeah.
With a Margi card in it that connected directly to a thing. It was a two-hour talk, and I probably spent 20 minutes on the actual talk. Because the thing I said right at the beginning was, now, if anybody has a question at any time, please ask it. Hands immediately shot up. I said, what the hell? I started taking questions. It was all about, how am I hooking my Palm Pilot up to the projector? It was all about that. And I said, I don't do that anymore. You know what? I'll bring a laptop. It looks low tech, old tech. Yeah. I don't care. Then their attention is more on me than on the technology using.
The talk.
For the semi. Yeah, exactly. I can't be bothered with that nonsense anymore.
It's remarkable.
But it will happen, and there are ways you can do it wirelessly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are devices you can buy to connect to the projector, and then wirelessly your iPad or your Android tablet.
I like some of the new projectors that have a USB port on it, so you plug a flash drive with your slideshow on it, and it just runs right from the projector. No computer needed.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No reason.
The technology is getting pretty huge these days, and it's pretty amazing the stuff we can do.
One less device to carry around, too.
It used to be.
How many computer dongles have you lost?
Yeah, all of them, frankly.
We get people all the time. I got a presentation to go to, and they forgot their dongle, or I left it at the last presentation. We need a dongle.
Where if it was cloud computing?
Well, it used to be. We would joke about this all the time. It used to be the big difference between Star Trek technology and our technology. There were only really three things: the replicator, the unlimited power, and no wires. The only wires were bee lights that fell out of the ceiling, apparently to tell them there'd been a collision.
Or when they needed a wire to splint someone's
REO,
they pull a panel off. This is optical conduit. Yeah.
Right. Those were the only three. We have Bluetooth and Wi-Fi and all kinds of wireless now.
Mm-hmm.
We were just talking about thorium-powered cars.
Yep.
And you can buy a device that essentially is a replicator. They come in a couple of different patterns. They're essentially like...
they call them 3D printers.
They call them 3D printers. And they're kind of like... They're essentially jigsaws that draw, you know, like the Etch-a-Sketches and all of that. Only they do it by either depositing a plastic, which up
it's a sand
a plastic or with a powder that you using laser. Where they focus the laser depends on where it solidifies. It's so cool.
if you want to check out a company, and this is no plug
for Z-Corp does it.
Z-Corp.
Yep.
I work on them, and some of the stuff that they can build. Nike, they do all their prototypes for their soles of their sneakers on this Z-print.
Yeah, it's really, really big in the rapid prototyping field.
Yeah, you can do a prototype, send it off, and say, here it is. Recreate this. And, you know, if it doesn't quite work, no big.
Yeah, you used to have to carve a wooden mold, and then you took the wooden mold and made a wax mold, and then you took the wax mold and made an aluminum mold.
Now you just make it in AutoCAD or any 3D blender or anything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you make it. And if it's not quite right, you fiddle with it and make it and fiddle with it and make it. And, it costs you a little bit for the powder, but so what?
Yeah, you've saved a lot. I'll bring in, I've got a little plaque, but it's three-dimensional. It's a color chart.
Yep.
And the thing is only this big.
Yeah, and you can add colors to it. You can do all kinds of things.
It does the whole rainbow from one end of the spectrum to the other.
The interesting one that I saw is this guy is on YouTube. This guy brought in a giant wrench.
Mm-hmm.
And said, can you make this? And he said, not only can we make it, it'll work.
They're talking about,
and not only will it'll work for real. I mean, you can.
A crescent wrench. You got to spin the thing, yeah.
And so they made it in one shot. Nothing had to be put together. They literally just made it in one shot. And then they gave him, a bolt to tighten, and he was bearing down on it, waiting to break this thing. It was real.
Yeah, they've got the hardeners in it. Or what else they can do with this stuff. I saw another part being made, and it was sort of like a gooseneck for a prototype for a lamp. And you first see it come out, and it's sort of on an angle, and they go, well, that's nice, but how's it going to work? So they first put the hardener on it, and the hardener also has this flex stuff in it. So they put the flex stuff right where it looked like an accordion type of stuff. And they're moving it around like this so they could actually see the prototype.
It looks like flexible rubber hose, the corrugated rubber hose.
I saw a show on the NASA channel where they were talking about putting one of these on a space station to replicate tools that you've dropped overboard or, we need this part that broke and we don't have a spare. Well, we'll just print you one.
Yep. As long as they have the 3D drawing, they can make anything they want. Yep. Now, that's not going to make Earl Grey hot, but it is going to do the stuff that you really need. In order to fix the space station or whatever. And then you only need the raw materials for the powder. And they're saying, well, that's the next thing we're making, trying to
powder
in
the
powders
solution.
Out of, the sand of Mars or whatever.
The big trick is when they can make themselves. There was a really interesting story by Nancy Kress, a local science fiction author, where a town would have one giant replicator for people to use.
Right.
And if you were rich enough, you could have your own small one in your house. And so, at the night when people weren't using it, they had the replicator making more replicators.
Sure, why not?
Yep. And then eventually people quit working because you just push a button and replicate. And then when the aliens came and destroyed civilization, no one knew how to do anything.
Right. Well, that is the problem. You still got to have enough scientists and engineers to be able to build the tools that make civilization possible.
Yep.
If we lose that, we got to crawl back out of the mud no matter what else happens.
We'll all have to go join the Amish to remember how to farm and milk cows.
It's sort of like that Sky is Falling series with Noel Wiley
Fallen
in
Sky,
it. Fallen Sky. Well, that was, for the folks who haven't seen it, it was a good turn of events for this last show.
Yeah, it really was.
I read an interesting review. Now it's getting good?
Yeah, well, exactly.
People gave up on it in the middle, and now it's getting good again.
Yeah, right. Well, that's true of so many shows. And, of course, now Eureka has been canceled.
I heard it got renewed for 2 seasons.
No. Gone. Bye-bye. All right. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 39 minutes after the hour. We're Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 43 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Drach on the IRC chat has reminded me that the other technology we don't have is transporters. Although we've done that in the labs, too.
That's based on replicators. Or replicators based on transporters.
One or the other,
Maybe
that's it. Transporters.
Coincidental.
There's a whole bunch of people on some planet listening in. Earl Grey, hot. Yes, sir. Make the tea, put it in the thing, push the button.
Yeah.
It appears in the replicator. Maybe that's how it works. Holy cow, who knew? The service industry is alive and well.
We could be living somewhere else, a second life.
Exactly.
Literally.
All right, here's our next story. Come on, it's not like you didn't see this coming. Google Plus is in the process, and has actually done so now, of debuting a bevy of social games from some high-profile developers, including PopCap, Zynga, Rovio, BioWare, and Funzio. As soon as the rollout is complete, which I wrote this last night, and by the time I was done, it apparently was complete. That's what Vic Adundra said. A games button should appear at the top of your Google Plus stream, which should grant you access to a bunch of games. You can see the latest game updates on from your circles, browse the invites you've received, and check out games that people you know have played recently, explains Vix Gundotra, Google Senior Vice President of Engineering, on the official Google blog. The games page is also where your game accomplishments will appear, so you can comfortably share your latest high score. Your circles will only see the updates when they're interested in playing games, too. And this is the nice thing about Facebook. Instead of having to block Frontierville and block Farmville and block Mafia Wars, it only ever appears when you click on the games button and see the game stream in Google+. Segregating game status updates to a separate feed is a smart move on Google's part and will thankfully cut down the clutter one might see on Facebook from their game-addicted acquaintances. Again, the games page is still being rolled out, so if it hasn't shown up on your feed, just be patient, although I think it's done now. Google has also announced it will be charging social game developers, like the Zynga, the people who make Farmville, only a 5% commission on in-game transactions. Facebook, on the other hand, charges a whopping 30% commission, which is a huge cut of profits that has been a bone of contention for developers for quite some time. Zynga, the developer of Farmville and Mafia Wars, has even been rumored to have dabbled in creating its own social gaming site in order to escape Facebook's 30% cut. Ultimately, rumors were just rumors, and Zynga has stuck by Facebook. But with Google's new social network making waves, who knows what'll happen? The current commission of 5% is just promotional. At least that's what Google Plus Games product manager Punit Soni says. Still, that's some pretty aggressive pricing, even for a promotion. Google doesn't yet know when the promotion will end or what it will charge developers on a regular basis, but I'll put money on the table that if gambling were legal, I would, of course. Mm-hmm. Don't gamble, kids.
Make a friendly wager.
I would make a non-wagering bet that...
we're non-profit anyways.
Right.
We are member-supported.
It won't be 30%. Google doesn't know when the promotion will end. Google is currently working with 10 game developers that have launched 16 games on Google. Currently, there are no in-game ads, but don't expect that to last. And Google Sony says that Google is going to be very aggressive about making users happy. Meanwhile, game developers see Google's promotional rate as a plus, but not a game changer. Other factors are more important, including monetization, user numbers, and retention rate. So are you ready to play games on Google Plus? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or of course... toll free at 1-800-790-0415. The games that are available right now, there's a bunch of them. Some of the ones you're familiar with, Diamond Dash and stuff like that, but Dragons of Atlantis and Edge World, Crime City. Zynga has poker. Of course, Angry Birds is there. Dragon Legend. Is there a device you cannot play Angry Birds on now? Seriously, I think it's on my microwave.
Yeah.
It's
that is
everywhere.
Addictive.
Zombie Lane, City of Wonder, Sudoku, of course. I haven't yet seen Puzzles with Friends.
Oh, Friends.
Words with Friends, yeah.
It's on Facebook.
Yeah, it is. And it eventually will be here, too, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
It just isn't yet.
It's so new.
That one I might be interested in, frankly.
That would be the only
game I might be interested in playing.
I've got it going with Dory and my daughter and a bunch of folks. I've got at least, I want to say, about 9 games going on.
Now, do you have to play in real time?
No. Well, no. Like right now,
it's turn-based. Yeah, it waits.
Yeah, it just waits.
Matter of fact, two folks make a turn.
They get back to me maybe every two to three days.
Ah.
So it'll let you know when it's your move. There's one part that says your move, and then once you make a move, it moves down to it's their move. So you just wait, and you can have it notify you when it, you know.
And it's one-on-one games,
yep.
and you can play with multiple people at the same time, multiple games.
Oh, yeah. I've got 9 going. Different games going.
Cool.
Yeah. I like it because, you know, it keeps the brain going. You know, doing the words and that type of stuff. And Cool. Man, sometimes it can be
I am not a huge game player. I'm really not.
Well, I like. Yeah, me neither. And to get in that with just spelling, you know, and looking up words and that type of stuff.
Yeah, I do love Scrabble.
That's what it is.
I do play Boggle on my phone. It's not called Boggle. It's called Word Up. But I play Boggle on my phone all the time.
Yeah, and it's like I say, I got hooked on that, and I've been playing it a lot. Matter of fact, both my daughter and Dory, we have both started a game with each other. So we got, essentially, just with those two people, I've got four games going on.
Yeah.
Because they say, you want a rematch? And I'm like, okay. Depending on who won, and they started, so did they. So those two, we've got four games going on. It's kind of
nice.
Fun.
Nice. So there's a lot, you know, of that stuff going on out there in the smartphone world. And I suppose you're playing it on your iPod, so you don't really need a smartphone to do it. It would be interesting if you could do it on your computer and on your...
have them all interface?
You know, sign in with... Words with Friends is Words with Friends is Words with Friends.
Yeah.
I should be able to sign... If I'm signing in, so you know who I am, which you have to do, right?
Yeah, it shouldn't matter where you are.
It shouldn't matter where you are. You should bring up the same game. Now, that would be pretty cool.
One thing I learned hard, well, not really. No, I got it was a hard lesson learned, but I did an update. Dan and I were doing updates to get to the 4G because AT&T just came out with a new update. So both of us did it. And, of course, my phone, you know, it's a typical rule.
Yeah.
If anything can go wrong, it'll happen to me.
Exactly. You are Murphy.
Yeah. Exactly. You know, so we both do that. We're standing there, both of us, doing the updates, watching it going. Mine's a little ahead of his. Mine comes up. Totally reset the whole phone.
No.
Totally reset the whole phone. Dan is having conniptions. I don't want to say the other word. he was on pins and needles waiting. His came back, and it was okay. I said, you live in a tree.
Yeah.
So I had to redo my whole phone. A lot of the apps were gone. I had to re-download a lot of apps. Now, one of the other things, like I said, which I'm very glad of because of having the SD card in there, like I've got the Keyring Fobble.
Right.
All I had to do was reinstall, download that app. Tell it to sync. It resynced with my SD card,
right.
Which, by the way, I get in the habit of hooking up my phone, and I copy that all off to my computer that gets backed up. So I get that. But the only thing that I really lost, like I say, the key fob, it brought all those in. Words with Friends, like you say, I signed back in. Oh, there's all the games back.
I'm sure they're keeping those online, so you should have no problem.
Now, the other thing that I was... very pleased with, because I have used Google, all my contacts, and my calendar came right back. Now, I did have to reassign all my ringtones to various people. Like, I've got my sister, it's this tune, your sister's on the phone, your sister's on the phone, where Sam's is this, southern guy. Pick up the damn phone. Damn it, I'm telling you, pick up the damn phone or I'm going to kick your butt. And it's going on, because that would be Sam telling me.
Yeah.
Wanting me to, seriously, pick up the phone. So, yeah, I got some unique ones.
But you've got all those backed up.
Yeah, they were already backed up, but they were still on the SD card. It didn't touch anything on the SD card. So the apps must be stored somewhere in the phone.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of that stuff is stored in special areas of the phone. I have my daughter's ringtone is her at about 8 years old going, Dad, pick up the phone.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's sweet.
And I've got that stored pretty much every place on earth.
Because you're not going to get that back.
You're never going to get that back. So, yeah, that's stored everywhere.
But why I always worry, and I tease my grandson about it. I've got this picture frame that Missy got me for Father's Day 1 year. And he couldn't have been more than, I want to say, 4 or 5. And sitting there saying, love you, Papa. And when he comes over now, because he's 13, I hit the button on that. He'll look around and goes, you still got that? I go, I will never get rid of that. That's exactly. Going to the grave with me.
Exactly.
That picture frame and the picture of them in it.
That's if real. You can copy those out, we get the sound, make it a ringtone.
I could record it.
Sure.
Just put it up to a microphone, record it, and then, oh, that would bust his chops. Have it as a ringtone when he calls.
That's exactly right.
Good idea.
Thank you very much.
Because I've got the one app that says you could, you know, you can make ringtones out of any sounds.
Right. So there's your tip of the day, folks.
There we go.
If you've got grandchildren, particularly young grandchildren,
mm-hmm.
Record them saying, pick up the phone, grandma, it's Mary, or whatever, you know, whatever you want them to say. And then you can make that your ringtone. So for forever and ever, whenever they call. My email thing is, Daddy, you've got mail. Again, at the same session, she was about 8.
Talking about that, I did one time. I was going down to Comdex. It's just when we were first
getting. This is 100 years ago.
Yeah, this. And Laurie was just starting to get used to the mouse and everything else. You know, she'd have some four-letter words, you know, and she'd be clicking on it. So what I did when I left is I changed, you know, because you can change the different sounds and all
right,
that.
Right, right.
And I just sat there and said, no, Lorraine, try again.
Oh, man.
Talk about scaring the
stayed with you.
Talk about scaring the ever-living out of somebody. She goes, because here she's home all alone. And my voice comes on the speakers telling her to stop doing that. She got on the phone, called me up. She goes, you son of a... what?
Got one of those phone calls, too. They're apparently prevalent in your household.
Yeah, she goes, you know darn well what you were doing. Oh, that.
we used to do that back in college. We had vax writers. one step up from a teletype where it printed on a sheet of paper.
Yep.
And the computer system we had a talk program where you could send a message to another terminal. And all us computer geeks hang out in computer lab. Right. There were a couple times a year where the nursing students would have to come down and do something on the computer, or the business students would come down and do something on the computer. And we could always freak them out, you know, the computer that we had in college. We could always freak them out by saying, you know, hi, how you doing? Or,
yeah, right.
That's a lovely blue shirt you're wearing today. And they'd go, how does it know my name? Because I'm sitting right next to you.
Yeah, right.
Oops.
Yeah, that's it. And that's been a useful thing. That has translated into
IMing
and mm-hmm. and SMS, short term, you know, the text messaging, and all the other stuff that you can do with phones and computers nowadays.
Because CRS.
Yeah, can't remember stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly, exactly. Boy, ain't that the truth? But yeah, it's pretty amazing. I mean, just look at the casual technology we're using. You can call us. You can text us. We're talking on IRC. You can watch us on Ustream. And it just all happens automagically.
Here's what gets dangerous, though. You get to rely on your phone so much.
Yeah.
For the numbers, you know, you just sit there, like you say, pull up a name and boom, it dials. And then you have your phone die and you don't have them backed up.
Yeah.
Well, just call them. I don't remember their number. It was in my phone.
It used to be I remembered all kinds of phone numbers. Now I don't remember any of them. I remember, you know, my wife was speed dial 1. My daughter was speed dial 2. I don't even remember have that anymore. It's just an icon on my screen.
Yep.
But, yeah, it's we don't remember things we used to. Well, I talked the other week about casual magic. You know, I took my daughter's picture with the Asus Transformer tablet. By the time I put the tablet down, the picture was already in Picasa. One more click, and I was sharing it with my family.
There you go.
You know, it was take the picture, one click, mm-hmm. that fast. It was just amazing, and it was a technology that simply didn't exist before that, and it was quite an astonishing thing.
There was an interesting essay that Isaac Asimov wrote probably in the 50s or 60s about we don't need to remember as much anymore. When he was a kid, they had to do log tables by memory.
Right.
And then they had calculators. So we have more tools available. We don't need to remember as much.
Right.
But then we can't when we have to.
And that's the problem. We're going to take another break, but we'll be back. You've wasted a whole hour. We'll be back for another hour, though. So if you didn't waste it well enough, you'll be able to. Sound bites right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. We're going to be bringing you Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco. It's going to be an amazing hour coming up. We'll even take your phone calls, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, or toll-free at 1-800-790-0415. So you stay tuned. We're going to be doing it again if you're on the EFNet IRC chat or watching us on Ustream. Don't hang up because we're going to be back. And like I said, it's 59 minutes after the hour. Sound bites. Member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Sound bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 3 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites, hurtling headlong into our second hour.
And we're coming up on an anniversary in a few weeks.
Yes, we are.
Be 22 years.
21 years.
No, 22.
22, you're right, 22.
Yeah, because we've been here 2 years already.
Yep, you're right. A lot of the software written for Google's Android mobile phones falls short when it comes to user privacy and security. Those are the conclusions of researchers from Pennsylvania State University and North Carolina State University who took a look at the top 1,100 free applications available in the Android market. They didn't find anything malicious, but a surprising number of the programs used unique identifiers, such as the phone's IMEI, or International Mobile Equipment Identity Number, sometimes without obtaining permission to do so from the user. One concern is that these unique identifiers could be linked to Android users in databases, essentially providing a stealthy way to track what mobile phone users are doing online, similar to the tracking cookies stored by web browsers. Unlike a tracking cookie, a mobile phone's IMEI cannot be deleted. The research follows up on work done by some of the same researchers who last year looked at 30 smartphone applications and found widespread sharing of location data and unique identifiers. Researchers are only now beginning to put together a picture of what's going on beneath the surface with these mobile phone apps, said William Enck, an assistant professor with North Carolina State University and one of the authors of the study. I think people are starting to become more aware of this, but I don't think there is widespread understanding of what the implications are, he said. The paper really expands our understanding of what applications under Android really are doing and what they are doing with our data, said Lee Tian, a staff attorney with the Electronic Frontier Foundation. The EFF is concerned that these unique identifiers could be used to track consumers' online activity, but TN did find some encouraging findings in the study, too. I was kind of happy to see that there doesn't seem to be any obvious misuse of the audio-video recording capability for listening in and that sort of thing. Now, the researchers call their work the initial but not final word on Android application security. Worried about what data your phone is grabbing? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5299, or, of course, toll-free at 1-800-790-0415, just like Joe did. Joe from Buffalo. Welcome, Joe. What do you know?
We're mentioning the poll. Facebook privacy settings, isn't that kind of an oxymoron?
You ain't kidding.
Good point.
History has proven, gosh, they disclose things that their users just never intended to disclose, but it... Oh, well. Anyhow, what I was really going to call about is I was wondering if you had any experience with this new generation of processors. They're calling them APUs. Basically, what they do is they take a processor such as the one I wanted for a long time, an AMD Phenom 2, and on the same die, they put a graphics processor like one of the ATI Radeon processors.
Right.
Have you had any experience with those? Because I was thinking about, putting together, building my own system.
I have not yet seen one of those.
And I don't know as if I'd want it.
At all. Well, that's an accelerated processing unit is what they're calling
it's
them.
It's in the attempt to make things cheaper, the more mm-hmm. stuff you can put on a single chip, the cheaper it yep. gets. There's also a side effect, and we've seen that with GPUs now being built into CPUs, is that the closer they are electronically, the faster the communication between them. So it's got some good theory behind it, but whether they come out with something that actually is faster or they're just trying to make it cheaper is going to be the question.
Right.
The angle I was going for is maybe graphics performance for things like HDTV and such like, that having the graphics processor on die, pretty much the video hardware, right. It would kind of speed along calculations for things like MPEG decoding and things like that. What do you think?
Yeah.
But the big thing, of course, is when you put the GPU right on the graphics processing unit on the same chip as the CPU, as Steve said, they can transfer data between them much, much faster. You know, the speed of light may seem pretty fast, but that's not quite what stuff is going through, what electrons are going through in a wire. And the closer they are, the faster that stuff can happen. And when you're doing millions or billions of calculations a second, distance counts.
Yeah, Apple's actually using one. The Intel HD graphics chip is an APU, and Apple's using them in some of their new MacBooks.
Yeah, and NVIDIA's got one called Project Denver.
The Fusion from
IBM
AMD.
Has the Cell. Intel, of course, has their HD graphics, yeah.
Like I say, not that I'm not going to say that most folks, once they get the graphics, a lot of the motherboards nowadays come with graphics, already on it. But, again, I like its own separate, because that graphics usually tends to share some of the memory on the motherboard.
Yeah, that's almost a bigger thing. If the graphics chip is built into the CPU chip, let's hope it has its own dedicated memory.
Yeah, which it's right. probably going to rely on the memory within the motherboard.
Right.
That you populate with it. Because, like you said, bottom line, it is to get the cost down. That is their bottom line, to reduce cost. And more folks want to, put in their own separate dedicated graphics card, which, takes less burden off the processor and, again, frees up more memory. If I want 8 gig in my system, I want that 8 gig to go totally to the processor and what it's doing, not to also be shared trying to do redraw some games, screen games.
Yeah, it's sort of becomes the leapfrog where the average folk don't need the power, mm-hmm. but in a couple, 3 years, regular programs will be using this power. Today we look at stuff, like games on Facebook and even simple games like Angry Birds. Those are pretty graphic intensive. And 2 or 3 years ago, that would have been prohibitively expensive. Now it's the standard chip.
Right. So if you're going to buy an APU, find out how much dedicated video memory there is, and if you can, where that memory is.
Yeah, it's also the matter of, gosh, one of those two components, well, processors hardly ever go, but graphics cards occasionally flake out. So, if one of them goes, gosh, all of a sudden you've taken them both down, that's one consideration. That's kind of why I'm leaning towards like an AM3 socket main board instead of one of these APUs. Another question I had was, what would you consider a good minimum amount of memory to have on your graphics card?
A gig.
Oh, a gig already. Oh, okay. Because I see some of them like they're 512 meg. And,
512 is okay. A gig is better. And a lot depends on what you're going to do, which is getting hard to judge these days. I'm just going to do simple web surfing. Well, 256 is fine. And then you say you're going to play games on Facebook. Well, now we're up to that 512 or a gig.
Yeah. And the more the better. It depends on what you're going to do.
TV is the biggest workload for my GPU.
Yeah.
Which
I'm doing it on a 64 meg card right now. You can tell how ancient it is.
Yeah, no, you want a gig.
512 video cards right now are dirt cheap. I mean, a gig, there may be, you can get those for $75 or less.
Yeah, I wouldn't.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I wouldn't get excited about the cost. Yeah. The big thing is how much RAM can you cram onto the board. So get the gig card. Be happy with the gig card. You're buying a laptop. Almost all laptops have non-dedicated shared video memory. That's a pain. It slows things down terribly, mm-hmm. takes memory away from other applications.
Yeah,
but, for example, the Lenovo line has a new ThinkPad out that's going to be using the AMD APU. So I haven't seen it yet. I haven't played with it yet, so I don't know what the specs are.
Apple has an interesting thing in their 15- and 17-inch laptops. They have two video cards. They have the Intel HD APU built in, which gives you longer battery life, but it's lower performance. And then they'll switch over to a dedicated AMD graphics card when you need the higher performance. So you, the problem with these high-performance video cards is they shorten battery life on laptops. So Apple puts in both, so you can have long battery and high performance when you want it.
Oh, yeah, and you can do a nice job of, you know, toasting your laptop with your graphics card running, you know, all out.
I've got to start making a concentrated effort. We have to stop calling them laptops. They're too hot to put on your lap. It's a notebook or a portable computer.
Yeah.
I agree.
Good point.
Well, thank you for your advice, gentlemen.
Thank you, sir.
Bye-bye.
Have fun.
Yep. There have already been lawsuits against a bunch of companies. Somebody left the computer on their lap for too long, and it burned them, and they're suing the company. I found a tech note at Apple about that, and it says if your notebook is getting warm, take it off your lap, which seems to be a reasonable thing to do.
Well, and there's a problem right there. Nobody does anything that's reasonable.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've watched a lot of people use laptops on their lap, and including my daughter. She'll curl up on the couch mm-hmm. like a cat and stick the laptop on a thigh and start working. And then every once in a while, you'll see her kind of shift it.
Yep.
Because it's just gotten a little too warm.
Some folks will get a pillow.
Well, and that actually
and
makes
bad.
It worse.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say. That's worse because
the feet on the bottom of your laptop lift it up off a flat surface and let the air flow underneath so that hot air can move away. Mm-hmm. You put it on a soft surface like your lap or a pillow, and then it traps the heat in even worse.
That's the thing I have to say I loved about my dear departed Chromebook. I could leave it on for 6-7 hours. It wouldn't even be warm to the touch.
Yep.
Well, a lot of them got to where they were using both the back of the laptop and the side to suck air in and pull it out. Instead of relying on the bottom, they were using they redesigned it to pull air in from the back
yep.
and blow it out to the side. So if you had it on your lap, you could. You could literally have it on your lap and not block those vents, which too often folks do, and then it overheats and shuts down. I had another client, you know, I love these little gremlins that just in the night
yep.
go in and destroy your machine.
Yep.
Two different instances here.
I didn't do anything and it stopped working.
Yeah. I had this one, bring it in, and they go, it just keeps shutting off. I can run it for about 10 minutes. And the damn thing just shuts right on off. Okay, we'll take a look at it.
Apparently the same guy that did Sam's phone thing. Yeah.
So, take the cover off, and I'm looking at it. And the clips, the little arms that hold the processor down tight, snug, which has to have firm contact,
mm-hmm.
I see them both pointing in opposite directions, up in the air. I go and grab it. I've got the whole fan unit right in my hand. I take a closer look. Two out of the four prongs where it's clipped to are broken. So it won't even connect. And you say, well, sorry, you know, this is broken. It's got to be broken. Well, I didn't do it. How'd that happen? Maybe it just, you know, the gremlins. Yeah, right. No, to literally happen.
Things break, and we can't control it.
Right. And for those two clips, though, I have never seen them automatically just pop up. Those are snug down tight, and for them to snap up, usually you got to get underneath there and pop them up so the arms will...
You can't get them off when you want to.
Yes. And then,
but it's metal under stress, you know, the heating and cooling cycles, mm-hmm. they will break.
Yep. So, you know, it popped and... did it.
Well, you know, talking about different APUs and stuff like that, Netflix has just announced that Netflix is available for Chromebooks.
Nice.
So you can add it from the web store and get Netflix. You watch your movies on the thing. But they've also said that if you have the original CR48, you can only watch movies in low definition because the graphics card isn't good enough. Whereas if you have the Acer or Samsung Chromebooks, then you can watch in high definition because they've got better graphics cards. Now, on the other hand, the Acer and the Samsung battery only last about 6.5 hours of full-time work, whereas the original Chromebook lasted 8. And part of that is the fact that you have a better graphics card running a little hotter, running a little more juice through it, taking the battery down a little more.
Right.
There ain't no such thing as a free lunch until we can power our laptops with thorium. So get over it, and you know, you pick what you want to pick.
Or broadcast power, like Tesla was working on.
Tesla did it. It wasn't working on it. He was working in it.
Use thorium. You get it. You buy the laptop once and never have to charge the battery ever.
Oh, they'll figure some way to charge you more. That's not going
to... No, but I mean never have to charge the battery.
Oh, yeah.
It'll just run for the life of the computer.
Wouldn't that be cool? For a laptop, I don't know that you could get a spec small enough of thorium. Seriously, I mean, if a gram will power your car, you know, how much do you really need powering your laptop?
Well, that's what I'm saying. It could wind up lasting
the
life of the laptop. The laptop, the other components will probably burn out before the
The tough the part is getting the, you got to probably put water in it fairly regularly, which would not be a problem.
No. I was in a TV show I was watching. They needed to find this weird chemical. And, some of these new laptops are fuel cell. They have this weird chemical in it. No, they have water in them.
Yeah.
Water and hydrogen is a fuel cell.
Exactly. But that would be the idea. The problem in that case, of course, would be making a steam turbine that was small enough to fit in your laptop. Talk about fan noise. What's that noise? It's my laptop. Sounds like a turbine. Odd you should mention that. But that's the sort of thing that, you know, maybe we'll see that in the future. And like I said, you can protect yourself against thorium with aluminum foil. So, you know, wrapping an eighth of an inch of lead around it should protect you pretty doggone well. But we'll see. I got to pick up a working Chromebook somewhere, somehow. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, with Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It is 19 minutes after the hour, and for some unknown reason, you continue to listen to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Don't go away, because it gets lonely in here without you. We'll be back in just a couple of minutes on the longest-running computer show on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 23 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Archandra in the IRC chat wants to found that, in fact, the website energyfromthorium.com not only exists, but there's stuff on it. I love it when the guys in the IRC chat are actually talking about the same things we're talking about.
Rarely happens.
It's rare, but it's good.
Rarely happens.
All right. Even as the shadowy hacker group Anonymous threatens to take down the mighty social networking site Facebook, claiming that they will kill Facebook on November 5th, remember the 5th of November, some researchers are criticizing Facebook security, saying it could be better. You think? We started testing the site and reporting vulnerabilities to them, says Mandeep Kara, chief marketing officer at security firm Sensic. In late July, Facebook started a bug bounty program encouraging researchers to confidentially report any security issues directly to Facebook. But Kara says Facebook brushed off the issues Sensic raised in the last few days about some weaknesses the security firm believes it has identified in Facebook login and passwords, among other things. However, Kara says Facebook apparently corrected one issue regarding ineffective session termination using Internet Explorer browser, which occurred when the user logged out using IE and backspaced a few pages. A refresh of the Facebook page automatically logged you in again. They said they can't reproduce the vulnerability, but it looks like they fixed it, Kara says. Sensic is criticizing the password system that Facebook uses, which Kara says is 6 characters. So it doesn't matter how long your password is, they only apparently save the first 6.
So you can type it in as many as you want. You're thinking that it's a super safe one.
Yeah, I did not try that yet, but I'm going to. It takes 30 seconds to crack. He also faults Facebook for not having SSL on the initial user registration. That's important. This can be sniffed by anyone, he says. So if you're in a cafe or in some public Wi-Fi area, log into Facebook. Don't do it because the login page is not encrypted.
That's what I'm saying. You should rewind SSL. Explain that to folks.
Right. SSL is one of the ways that they use it secure. It's a secure socket layer. And what it is it encrypts the transmission from your computer to the website so that when you go to put in your username and password, it's encrypted. And Facebook does not do that. In fact, that's one of the reasons that I'm still working on redoing Ask Nick. But that's another story. This can be sniffed by anyone, he says. He also complains about Facebook's auto password complete function, saying as a good practice, you should not complete the password automatically. He faulted Facebook's bad login message because he says it tells too much, and saying you didn't enter the right email, for example. But after Senzik reported these findings to Facebook, they came in back and said, the password and SSL stuff, these are best practices, not vulnerabilities. So our response was, shouldn't you be following best practices since everybody is hacking you? The hacker group Anonymous allegedly threatened to destroy Facebook on November 5th, accusing the social networking site of spying on users, cooperating with authoritarian governments, and abusing people's privacy. However, because the alleged and anonymous notification did not originate from better-known sources of anonymous communiques to the public, some are questioning whether this is an authentic anonymous threat at all. Anonymous, however, has proven diligent in carrying out threats it has made in the past. So our question to you, how do you feel about Facebook now? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free, 1-800-790-0415. Or if you prefer, we'll get on Facebook and call you.
There was an interesting episode of GRC's Security Now, while you guys are recovering, on password haystacks. And Steve Gibson, he's been a security researcher for a long time now, came to the realization that longer is better. If you want to.
Huh?
Yeah. There are password lists that have been discovered by looking at password databases. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Rainbow tables.
And hash tables and things like that. But 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 is the most commonly used password.
Right.
Blank.
Dictionary words. Ironically, password, I think, was the fourth most common password.
Yeah, because that's usually the default for a lot of them.
Yeah.
Used to be within Windows Server.
Yeah.
Password was your default password that it made you change automatically.
Yep. For a while now, security researchers have been saying you should use a long, complex password, you know, hash mark, 6, left elbow, you know, forehead, you know, and it's really difficult to remember. People can't do that because it's too difficult to remember, and you've got your
CRS,
the XKCD.
The XKCD comment.
If you look at Wednesday's XKCD, if you go to xkcd.com/936/, you'll see a password strength comic, and basically they use the word troubadour with a zero for the O, a 4 for the A, followed by ampersand 3. And Randall Monroe, who does this, is a mathematician. And so he figured out the entropy bits, which is how you determine how hard it is to break.
Mm-hmm.
It has 28 bits of entropy, which means if you can guess 1,000 times a second, you'll break it in 3 days. However, if you just string the words correct horse battery staple together, it has 44 bits of entropy. Any one of those words is not bad, but cracking them all, you get 44 bits of entropy, which is 550 years to guess at 1,000 guesses a second. And Troubadour TR0UB4... DOR ampersand 3 is hard to remember. Correct horse battery staple is easy to remember. So from 20 years of effort, we've successfully trained everyone to use passwords that are hard for humans to remember but easy for computers to guess.
Yep. So what Steve Gibson has found, and he's got a neat brute force calculator at grc.com/haystack, calculates how much entropy your password has and how easy it would be to crack. And one of the things to do is just put one uppercase letter in. You know, so correct horse battery staple. There's it's only searching 26 characters of password space, but put one capital letter in, and now you've got 52 characters. Put a number in, you've got 61 characters, and you can vastly increase the difficulty of a brute force password attack with you know just 10 characters, and you know put some periods in, mm-hmm. there's some spaces in, a mix of uppercase and lowercase, just so that you know what your pattern is. So it's an easy to remember password that is long enough. So that's always been the length. You know, mm-hmm. password is easy to remember.
Yes.
You know, but password and then 16, you know, ampersands is still easy to remember, but significantly harder for a brute force crack. So it's interesting seeing how long it will take for a brute force crack on some of these really long passwords.
Right. And I just put in correct horse battery staple. And then in between correct and horse, I put exclamation point one. In between horse and battery, I put ampersand two. In between battery and staple, I put pound three.
And so now it's going to take 2 trillion centuries to brute force attack.
3.6, 200 million trillion centuries.
Yep.
At 1,000 guesses per second.
And what's interesting,
which is totally impossible, 1,000 guesses.
Well, no.
Gibson, or human, though.
Well, yeah, Gibson found, going back to GPUs, he found a security researcher built his own password cracking box using 4 AMD video cards, and he can attack and test 30 billion passwords per second.
Right.
30 billion password attempts per second.
And if it, with the password I just gave you, 100 billion guesses a second would still take 3.26 trillion centuries.
Not worth it.
It's right. Yep. It's not, you know, so it's really about the, and there are hash tables. Most places, when they store your password, they turn it into a hash, which means they replace the characters with other characters.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't really know your password.
Right.
They use an algorithm to do that, and then every time you type in your password, they use the same algorithm on it and do the two hashes match. That way they don't have to ever know your password.
Mm-hmm.
But if you know, and many of them are one-way hashes, in which case you're fairly safe. But if they use a two-way hash, that is to say, you type in your password, they grab the one that's in there and unhash it.
Then, yeah.
So and check the two. Then that's the two-way hash, and those are easily broken. There are rainbow tables that you can download from the web that have them up to 24 characters. So if your password has fewer than 24 characters, chances are really good that it can be broken within half a second.
So, and just putting one uppercase letter in and putting one number in extends that into, you know, huge lengths of time.
Well, no, but it's got to also be longer than 24 characters.
Right. Put a symbol in, you know, use a hash sign or use a period. So as long as it's not a single dictionary word. So some people might try using a 20 character word. If it's a single dictionary word, that's bad. But,
right.
Yeah, 20 characters.
Well, like Nick has done, you know, use phrases.
Yeah, happy 34 monkey. So I did bracket, happy, capital H, happy, 34, capital M, monkey, close bracket. It will take 1.49 million centuries to break. So it's easy to remember,
mm-hmm.
but extremely hard for a computer to guess.
Yeah, and phrases, you know, and like you say, on those phrases, it can be an easy phrase for you to remember. But say, you know, for an I or an E, you know, you substitute some other particular character, an and sign for an E.
Right. Well, and this, and according to this, the original Happy 34 Monkey we used to tell people to try, still at 1,000 guesses a second, takes 55.79 million centuries. However, using that guy's fast line attack, it's only 55.79 years. And if they use a massive cracking array scenario like the CIA or the NSA can bring to bear, and, oh, by the way, half of Russia, any one of the stands, that's 100 trillion guesses per second. It's only going to take them a little less than 3 weeks.
Okay.
But then when, like Steve said, you make the H's capital, it suddenly goes way up. at that massive attack scenario, instead of taking just shy of 3 weeks, it takes almost 65 years. And if you add just one symbol in the middle of that, it now takes 15.6 thousand centuries. So it's the length is important if it's in a, hash table, which you don't know, so you should make it longer. But what's really important, combinations of upper and lower case characters, numbers, and symbols.
And, no patterns, nothing in a row. I just did exclamation, at, pound, dollar, percent, circumflex, ampersand, star, open paren, close paren. Well, that's pretty random, isn't it? No, that's just the shift top letters, and it will take 15 seconds to crack.
And again, though, this all boils down to, folks say, well, that's so darn hard, to remember this. You know what? Fine. Then don't do it. It all depends on how much you want to protect your data.
And think of logging into your bank. Think of logging
into
anywhere.
That's it. I mean, this is your information that's going out over the internet.
And it really porks me off when people hide behind pretending to be stupid.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
People are not stupid. I once sat with a lady who was 85 years old. She whined that she could not remember passwords. They were too hard. Mm-hmm. So I asked her, what's your recipe for cookies? She rattled off 5 of them. And they had massive numbers of multiple ingredients, how long they were cooking, mm-hmm. teaspoon of this, tablespoon of that, yada, yada, yada. Mm-hmm. She rattled off 5 of them. I said, what about pie? She rattled off 9 more. And then I said to her, and you can't remember a password? She had to admit I busted her. She had a brain. She just didn't want to use it.
Yeah, it was
I'm tired of people pretending to be stupid.
I really mean to help folks. But when you come in and don't take, one, the time to protect your data or to back it up, sorry, there's only so much I can be there and support you.
And we hear it all the time here. We hear it in our shops. Oh, I don't know much about computers.
Yeah.
Okay, well mm-hmm. we'll help you learn a little bit. And you, it doesn't have to be hard. We can teach you simple things. Just it doesn't have to be that you don't know anything about computers. That's why your computer broke.
I had one just this week. Hard drive was pretty well messed up, and I knew it was one of these that was going to be have to bring it back to the shop, pull the hard drive, and do it. And they go, well, why can't you do that here? I go, where am I going to hook it up to? Well, shouldn't you be carrying a laptop so you could hook it, pull it out, and put it up here? I go, that's going to take quite a while to scan. Oh, how long could it be? Just wanted to do bad. I wasn't going to win this one. Just tell you what. I'll start a scan on it. You let me know how long it's going to how long it took. Because, I don't want to stay here for the evening.
Yeah, sometimes these scans take days,
weeks,
even
months. Oh, it can't take that long. Following day, I called. 5.5 hours to do this complete scan.
And that's pretty short for a drive scan.
Yeah, and this was on a terabyte hard drive. Mm-hmm. And folks wonder why,
multiplied by an hourly rate.
Yeah, I don't want to sit there, it depends on what you're having for dinner and that, and the sleeping arrangements, if I'm going to get my own room.
Right. Well, and the other
not
thing...
Not sleeping on the floor.
Let me finish my story. I talked to this lady, right? She could not remember passwords. She remembered all these other things. She said, what was your very first phone number? She rattled it off. She just rattled it off. And I said, all right, you remember phone numbers used to start with words, Farragut, FA8,
Norwood.
Right? FA Norwood 5, Norwood NO3, I think it was. But the point is, she remembered her first phone number. I said, all right, your first phone number has uppercase characters, numbers, mm-hmm. and a dash.
Oh, yeah. That's
Let's add your initials to the end. There's your password.
Thank you.
She said, oh, I can remember that. Now, I put that in here. I just put AB 51234 JV, right? I don't even know what that is. But if an online attack happened, it would take them 19.25 million centuries
to figure that
to
out?
Break that password. If for that online attack, the 100 billion guesses a second, 19.25 years, the CIA could break it in a week. But really, how many people are going to have CIA quality things? So you can remember passwords. Let's stop pretending you can't. Find a phone number, a phrase that means something to you. As long as it's not a common phrase that everybody else knows, like if you always say whoop-de-doo, don't use that phrase, right? But find something and make your password. We're going to take a break. It is 40 minutes after the hour. It is Soundbites right here on the great member-supported Jazz 90.1. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
I'm Steve Ray.
And at 44 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Having trouble getting through to a couple of the websites at RIT that I wanted to talk about. So we'll talk about the news. Android media tablets are slowly grabbing market share from the iPad, but no single competitor has yet to mount a formidable challenge to Apple's industry-leading slate. Makers of Android-based and other media tablets have collectively taken 20% of the market from the iPad in the past 12 months, according to ABI Research's new media tablet study. The report, however, confirms what is readily apparent to tech industry observers. No tablet maker has been able to build the mythical iPad killer, a slate so compelling that it cuts sharply into Apple's market dominance. So what's the problem? Fragmentation with an operating system software, particularly Google's Android OS, is hampering growth, according to ABI research analyst Jeff Orr. Android currently has no fewer than three software builds for tablets. That's bad news for app developers who may delay development of an Android app if the market potential isn't there. There's no shortage of Android competitors, however. Defeatured, low-cost media tablets are being introduced by more than 50 vendors in 2011. This will certainly help bolster year-over-year growth for the category, but it also creates a negative perception in the minds of the mass consumer audience about the readiness of media tablets to feel functional, to be fully functional within the next several years. Smaller devices may help Apple's competitors. Tablets with 7-inch displays, including the Samsung Galaxy Tab, HTC Flyer, and the A100, offer an alternative to consumers who find the 9.7-inch iPad, too large for their needs. And with the cheapest iPad selling for $500, the 329 Iconia Tab A100 and newly discounted 399 HP touchpad may appeal to bargain hunters, particularly if the economy continues to lag. So our question to you, tablet do you lust for? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ, that's 966-5999, or of course, toll free at 1-800-790-0401.
The Amazon tablet probably has the best potential because they've already got an established store. They've got the music store. They've got the physical, object store. They've got the bookstore, the audiobook store. So they're sort of in the best position to compete with both Apple and Google for the tablet space. It's all a wait and see to what comes out. And as we get closer and closer to Christmas, it's hard to imagine that we're close to the Christmas buying season. But
that's going to be, I think, the next hot item is September, literally the tablets.
Yeah, September, October is typically when people announce stuff for Christmas.
Well, you go to the stores now for the back to school.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the notebooks or laptops that you can get, a 15-inch notebook. A friend of mine just got Windows 7 on it. With 6 gig of memory, 500 gig hard drive, I think it was under $400.
Yep. Well, and that's one of the things that we've been talking about in terms of these Chromebooks and stuff. They're $350.
Mm-hmm.
What am I really getting for that extra money? Well, one of the things I'm getting is more battery life.
Yep.
But, now I'm only in Google. That may be perfectly fine for me. But, it's a tough sell for some people. It's a tough sell for a lot of people. It's an interesting little problem. But, we're going to put that aside for now. And instead, we're going to talk to George from Greece, New York. Welcome, George. What's your question?
My question pertains to the ability to record radio programs from the Internet when they're streamed.
Yep.
I've been using a product called Radio Shark, which has worked nicely because you can program the times and the duration.
Mm-hmm.
But some programs or some stations don't come in very clear during certain times of the day.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Radio Shark is an actual AM/FM radio.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But the programming of it is very neat, and it's something that I have certain programs that I record daily.
Right.
Yep. So now the question is, with a greater number of programs coming through the internet, as I understand, it's called streaming.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Is there a program that's similar in terms of how to use it.
There are many. I showed one to Dave, 20 years ago?
At least.
Called Total Recorder.
Are you Mac or Windows?
This would be for Windows.
Okay.
Yeah, it's called Total Recorder.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much it costs now. It was about $15 back then. And that was Canadian dollars, so they went farther back then. They don't go nearly as far now. But it was a Total Recorder, and it was at highcriteria.com.
Yeah, we've talked about it in the past as well.
I think it's bookmarked.
There's the one for Mac called Radio Shift from Rogue Amoeba. I got to love their icon. It's an Amiga with an AK. and basically, it's a program on your computer, and you tell it... most of them will have lists of shows that they already know about, and you can say record this now, just like your regular DVR, or you can say record this stream from this time to this time.
Mm-hmm.
You can for the product Total Recorder itself is $18 US, and it does everything you've asked for. You can give it a stream. And tell it start now, end now, save it in this format, you're done. If you double that amount of money, you can get the professional edition. If you add another $18, you can get Video Pro edition, which does video as well for streams like the Ustream thing.
Okay.
So there's plenty of them out there. I have always loved Total Recorder.
Yeah, same here. It worked fabulously, and the other thing, though, is you can take that particular program that you download, and you can also compress it. So if it's just a talk show, you don't need high stereo quality. You can compress it. So it's a smaller size, and say you want to put it on iTouch or an MP3 player that you can take along with you and listen.
Well, Dave, you're right on the mark, because what I do with the Radio Shark, you can compress those programs, too.
You can do this with Total Recorder.
Yep.
And it is the talk shows that I'm interested in, and getting it on MP3 is the
This
kind
is
of the
your product, trust me.
There you go. I've been, like Nick said, I've been using it, it's got to be a good 15 years or better.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I love it.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome, sir.
Bye.
Yeah, like this show I record, it's... what does it work out to be? It's like an hour and 40 minutes.
Right.
Elapsed time, because I edit the commercials out. That's about 800 megabytes in CD format. But since it's only us talking, we can compress the heck out of it. And
I
get it down to about 40 megabytes at a really high quality rate.
Yeah, and you don't lose any quality whatsoever.
So. Well, and that's just it. I mean, for voice, you don't need... Yeah. A real high-end...
And a lot of one of the things to look at, too, is a lot of radio shows have their own podcasts, so that, you like to listen to a show, they probably already have an audio podcast feed where you can download and listen to it in an MP3 player like iTunes or Winamp or any of the other players. In fact, I just started listening to Star Talk with... Neil deGrasse Tyson, on astronomy and physics. And they had a neat one talking about science fiction movies with Phil Plait, the bad astronomer, who he blogs about how bad the science is in movies. And you always, at the end of the movie, they always say scientific consultant or scientific coordinator. And what did he get wrong? Well, you can imagine he said, well, no, you can't do that. And, lasers don't go around corners. And the director says, well, I need it to, because I got to shoot the bad guy.
Yep.
Anything is possible.
Yeah, so the director overrides the science.
Yep.
Well, I'm always amused by that stuff. I was talking to my daughter the other day. We were watching Phineas and Ferb, and there was something she did, which if you haven't watched it, you really need to. She was watching Dr. Doofenshmirtz make some innator or other, and she said, can't do that. I said, wait a minute. You're watching a cartoon. You don't mind seeing a purple platypus walking on his hind legs. But this you have a problem with?
Gary.
The answer was always, shut up, Dad.
Yeah.
Yeah, they don't like it when you point other things out.
Yeah.
Well, when it's obvious it's a cartoon.
Right. Right.
Yeah. It's
Phineas is the doctor, by the way. If you think about it, probably from me, yeah. Yeah, and the guys are in the IRC chat are talking about the various ways they use M-Player. I use a much simpler one than that, but that's okay. It's pretty amazing what you can do nowadays. Everybody's streaming,
mm-hmm.
and if you want a time shift, Audio, there are a dozen different ways to do it on the Mac, on the PC, on Linux.
Ooh, here's one called The Physics of Superheroes from StarTalk. So, holy, delta X, delta P is greater than or equal to H over 2.
Sure.
Or is that an H or is that a lambda?
It's a lambda.
That's a lambda. All right. So, all you physics geeks, what's that the formula for?
Something where you could say, holy something Batman.
Holy Hakala Batman.
Right. But I'll tell you what, the ability to...
That's the uncertainty of momentum.
Exactly. the ability to time shift your audio. You know, a lot of places, Steve is right, a lot of places like us, we podcast. And a lot of places podcast. Some people charge for it. Some people don't podcast at all.
The vast majority of them are free.
The vast majority of them are free. And I really, you know, if they charge, do not copy them. Pay the money. We condone that.
For a while, one of the most popular AM radio talk show blowhards was the only one that charged for his podcast.
Now there are several. There are several from both ends of the political spectrum, but the vast majority of them are still free. And, of course, if you've got a podcaster, a program that will automatically download your podcast and automatically put them on your MP3 device, can you still do that? Can you do that now with an iPod without having to have iTunes?
No, but once iOS 5 comes out. Well, yeah, you can do it on your iPod Touch or on your iPhone without a computer.
Okay. We're done for another week. Thanks so much for listening. It's Soundbites on member-supported Jazz 90.1. See you next week.